The city of Gotham gives rise to villains and darkness. Heroes and defenders of justice will rise up. The villains have chosen their dark path.
Our heroes made the choice of truth over personal happiness, and we have chosen to document it all. We are here to tell their stories. We are Gotham Undercover. That's right. We are Gotham Undercover. I'm X-Force 11, Jeff, and happy to be back with you.
And I'm John McGrail, also known as The Substitute.
And we welcome you to Gotham Undercover. Yes, got The Substitute back with me this week. Unfortunately, Karen wasn't able to join us this week, and so John was so gracious to jump in, and we're glad to have him. So thanks for being here, John.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it. So, yeah, we understand that Karen got a little bit under the weather, and we certainly hope she's getting better care than she would at Arkham Asylum.
So, definitely.
Do hope you feel better soon, Karen. Mm-hmm. Gotham Undercover, we are part of the Golden Spiral Media Network. You can find us at goldenspiralmedia.com or the show's Facebook page by searching Gotham Undercover.
That's right. And tonight we're talking about Season 3, Episode 11, Beware the Green-Eyed Monster. This was written by John Stevens, who's an executive producer on Gotham, and he's also done work on Gossip Girl, The OC, and Gilmore Girls. And it was directed by Danny Cannon, who's done several episodes of Gotham, and he's done work on Tomorrow People, Nikita, and CSI. So,
Jeff, I cannot believe that we are halfway through this season.
I know, it is wild, but it's good that we're halfway. We're getting that way, and we'll talk a little bit about that in the news later on. But yeah, it is wild that it's episode 11.
It's like it's gone really, really fast, and the storytelling has been really, really tight. And I love what they're doing with the characters, especially Barbara. I know I keep talking about that, but the show just continues to advance and to impress. And I can't wait to see what the back half unfolds, but let's get into this episode, Beware the Green-Eyed Monster.
Yeah. So let's give it a rating. What was your rating, John?
My rating was 9.25 pissed off brides.
Nice. And I gave it 9 stabby babs for the win.
Yes, indeedy. Okay. When she will, no doubt.
Yeah, definitely. So, since Karen's not here, I pulled the titles from the blog post, and they're not quite as good as last week, but you'll have to check out the titles there, because in addition to the titles for the story, I gave quotes and even an audio clip. So here you go. The A story is Hey Jealousy, and that's the Mario and Jim and Lee story. The B story is Attachment Leads to Jealousy, the Shadow of Greed, that is. And that's the Ed, Babs, Tabs, Butch, and Oswald storyline.
I gotta let that go.
And then the C storyline, not quite as good. It's A Mother's Jealousy Protects. So that talks about Bruce, Selina, Alfred, Mara, I guess is how you say her name, which is Selina's mom, and the Court of Owls.
Yeah. All right.
So, so we're going to jump in with the A story, which is the bulk of the story with Mario and Jim. So what did you think about this section of the story?
You know, this was a perfect summation of everything that we have been wanting Jim to finally come out and talk about how he's feeling, tell Lee everything that he's done to, you know, to try and keep this an honorable situation, to keep himself, you know, doing the honorable thing. And I was a little disappointed that they made Mario such a villain so fast that it's clear, you know, once everything clears the air, which, you know, I'm hoping it does, that Lee will see that Jim was really coming to her rescue. That's probably a little bit easy when you get down to it. But, you know, I was happy to see that Jim was finally able to come out and say, you know what, here's the deal. I was there at the house. I couldn't go in, but there's no doubt how I feel. You know, I love you. I always have. And, you know, I really, really, really felt for him. I think that was, you know, some of Mackenzie's best work was in that chapel scene with her. So loved it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I thought the chapel scene was just so well acted on both sides of the story, just showing how much it got to her, but it was too little too late at that point for her. But once again, the acting, I really have liked the progression of Jim this season, of how far he's come, and seeing him slowly get back at the GCPD and now expressing these feelings. I think he was forced that way because he knew what was going on, but it was so good. I love that he comes on the job and he's investigating this murder, the murder of the lab tech, and that Mario had killed, and he was basically working to get out of the way. And Harvey was saying, do anything, be anywhere but here. But for Jim, his processing and having his mind on, you know, not on the wedding, really had to be in his work. That's where he gets around, because if he was out fishing or doing whatever, his mind would be concentrating on Lee.
Yeah.
So
I totally love their exchange when he's like, you know, I'm captain, right? And Jim's just like, yeah, and just keeps running. Poor Harvey. just can't take the mantle of leader and really run with it.
Well, I agree with you, they pushed Mario to the villain status a little quicker than I probably would have liked, but I did like the way they did it, because it was jealousy that pushed him over the edge. All the attacks last week helped, but it was really that jealousy. But even in the midst of that jealousy, you saw his intelligence come forth of, okay, I know that I'm going to be tested for this blood. How can I get around it? I'm smart enough to figure out, okay, let's go to the lab and look at the analysis and figure out what chemical's going to mask it. So it's really interesting to see at that point the virus or whatever was not fully in sway, or just his mental strength helped him to see past those turns and look forward to say, I've got to plan things out with Jim. I've got to do X, Y, Z. I've got to call Zaz. So that was really interesting to me. Do you think the virus affects everybody differently, and that's why he was able to do that? Or was he just not under sway of the virus at that, so strong at that point, so he could do that?
You know, I think he was under the sway of the virus, and that's a great question. You know, what can we learn from the two, you know, infected folks that we've seen? What can we take from Barnes and from Mario. And I think what I can figure out at this point is that the virus latches on to the strongest thing that is, you know, what's your motivation? Mm-hmm. What's your driver? And it amplifies it to such a degree that it's just totally out of control. So in Barnes' case, it was this sense of justice, and he couldn't deal with it unless everything was taken care of and everything was put right. And in Mario's case, it was jealousy. And so that jealousy produced this monster. Extrapolating that, what would it mean for, you know, for somebody like Lucius, you know, what, or like Harvey, you know, I mean, like, what would be the thing? I mean, I think it's easy to point to Babs, but you know what that would be. But I wonder if we take some of these characters that we don't know their ins and outs as well, and it's like, what would be the thing in them that is their driving motivator, and you know, what to the extreme would that look like?
Yeah, that's the same thing I wondered. Is I think it would be different for everybody. And some people would be able to be more in control than others and be able to deal with it based on what motivation or emotion or factor, like you said, is in charge and that plays on it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, by means there, yes, jealousy is crafty and thinks about things and stews on things and thinks things ahead, whereas Barnes' anger and rage there just blinds things out. To kind of take it to another DC aspect, you think about the whole aspect of the power rings in the DC universe, where the different colored rings have a choose who they're going to go after based on that effect, you know, whether it's willpower or hope or, you know, greed or rage. And that's kind of what I thought, is this virus is playing on one of those things. So, yeah, it'd be very interesting to see somebody else and see what factors that went to. But I did like how Mario was those steps ahead and pulling Zaz in. That was great to see Zaz again. It's always fun to see him. And he's like, I'm not supposed to let you go till a little.
It's on the nine.
Oh, absolutely love that.
And you know what? I mean, I know they wrote it this way, but it really kind of irked me that Jim didn't come out and everything else he told Lee, he was just like, okay, how about you know, Mario bring Victor Zsasz over to the house to babysit me, and you know, try and nearly kill me. I mean, he never brought that up. And to me, that would have been a serious kind of, okay, wait a minute, kind of point. And you know, I don't know why they decided to let it go at that, other than just to let it play out that she would really hate him.
Yeah. So I liked the scheming of, okay, how we saw in the scene earlier where he has to knock Jim out, says, you're here too early. I can't kill you. I can't make you a martyr. I've got to make her push you away. Yeah. And that's what he succeeds in doing. And I think that's going to have long-term ramifications. Yes. I think that the murder weapon will be found, and once Fox can back up the case that, yes, he masked the test, Lee will learn to trust Jim again. But it's going to be a hard road, and I think the bigger hard road is for her, because I said in the blog post that I think she's going to have a harder time forgiving herself and trusting herself down the road, because she's gotten involved with Jim and she kind of knew what was going on with Jim, but she got hurt. She got involved with Mario and she got hurt, and it was all about trust. So the easiest thing is I'm going to pull back and I'm not going to trust anybody. So I think it's going to be good character development if they go that way so that we kind of get insight into who Lee is and build her more as a character. But we'll see if they go that way.
No, I totally agree with you. I think she knew in the closure that she tried to give, you know, the night before the wedding that she tried to give to herself and to Jim. I think she knows where her mm-hmm. heart is, but she also knows this is the path that I committed to, and I'm gonna play that out. And seriously, did have, you know, I think real love and affection for Mario. It's gonna be really, really hard to kind of bridge that relationship back with Jim. I mean, if nothing else, she watched him blow this mm-hmm. guy away. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, that's not going to leave for a very, very long time. So yeah, I see her off on her own working through this, you know, at least through the back half of the season, if yeah. not more.
It's going to be an interesting story to see. And I liked the aspects that the writers and the directors brought in, those little touches that just made you scared this episode. Because after we see that scene of Mario killing the guy by squeezing his head, every time Mario goes to kiss yes. Lee, he's got a hand on each side of her head. And I'm like, oh, no, don't.
Too much.
Especially yeah, on the dock there. Oh.
Mm. Yeah.
But I love the cinematography in the episode. Her outfit, the wedding outfit, just the light of there in the chapel of the confrontation, and how they did those over-the-shoulder shots of looking over her shoulder and his shoulder and switching back and forth. The real contrast yeah. of being out at this cabin getaway where there's fog on the water but it's still bright, and having Mario come out of the shadows. I just really appreciate the cinematography work on this series in general, but this episode really helped to punch things up.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, on that, let's take just a minute to talk about the wedding versus Jim.
Oh, that was masterful.
Unbelievable. And I love that there was so little dialogue. You didn't need it. The imagery was so powerful and such a dramatic, you know, beauty of this wedding and the full church and Marina Baccarin in a wedding gown, which is just amazing. and then on the other side, in the dark, you know, in the shadows, Jim just getting pummeled yet again. It's like his full-time career. I mean, just, you know, someday somebody's going to go back and review this whole series. And how many times did Jim just get knocked out? I mean, it's just going to be a tremendous number.
And he's going to learn to avoid that church. That church brings him nothing but pain.
yeah, is that
I believe
the same one?
So. I believe so. Mm-hmm.
Where Barbara tried to take me out
last season? Yes.
Oh, God, I didn't even put that together. Oh, wow, that's yeah. You're right. That's a bad place. They need to. If they ever get married, that needs to be adjusted.
Yes, there you go.
but unbelievable. I talk on and on and on about this scene. I mean, it was amazing. Amazing, amazing. And you're right. The cinematography on the show is just outrageous. And this just went to an entire different level of artistry and imagery. And I was blown
definitely.
Away.
Definitely. The cool thing is they have this tension-filled scene, and then we cut to Fox kind of filling in Harvey. I figured out a way around it, and he's starting to give him the whole techno babble. And Harvey's like, just give it to me straight, you know, give it to me in English. And he tells him, And you see Jim getting dumped out the car, and he picks up the phone and is like, hello.
Yeah, and then his phone rings. He's like, Harvey?
Oh, man. But I love Fox. I'm glad they're kind of looping him in a little bit more. I really want to see him more active in the second half of the season, because he's just a favorite character, and how he brings those smarts in, and he really is working to figure things out. He's not going to let things lie. He looks into things deeply, and so they determine, okay, yeah, he's masked. Yeah.
So wait, just a second. Back in season two, when Ed had Lucius and Bruce in the in the gas chamber or whatever, I really want to see them come back around with Lucius and Ed going at it brain to brain again. I think that would be tremendous. I know Fox has already said, look, you come after him again, and that's it. But I really want to see them play out something between Fox and Ed sometime, when it's just one guy's smarts versus the other. I think that would be outstanding to watch. So
That's great. That's maybe a hopeful thing that they can look into in the second half of the series. it was interesting. You know, they discover everything, and so they determine, okay, we know how he did it, but they've skipped out on the reception. Where they've gone to, we don't know, but Jim knows how to get the answer. So he goes to the Don, and once again, the beautiful kind of scenery there with the warmth of the sunlight and him sipping his drink. And I love the realization on his face when he realizes, yes, my son's been infected and the court did this. They're the ones that pushed him, and that may be the reason why they were going after him, is to push him. And you kind of get those gears spinning in his head. He's not saying anything, and he's not going to give up the owls because he's not going to risk his agreement with them. But he definitely knows that his son needs help.
So do you think he was implying that Jervis was just a tool of the owls?
I don't know. That's the interesting thing. I think it can be seen either way. It can be seen that he was a tool of the owls. They gave him kind of the backing, the know-how. They were interested to see how that worked and use those as chess pieces. So they were fully backing him and asked him to do that, or they knew that he did that and wanted to test it out for themselves. So I can see it either way there. What their real motivation is, I don't know, but it's very interesting to think about.
It was great to see him back, even for just a few minutes in this episode. And Jim being able to play his game and get him to give information up was just brilliant. Kudos to Jim for being able to rhyme his way into getting the information. So, and I loved it when Jervis was like,
that was great. So Jim finally gets the location and heads out there, and just in time gets there in time to save Lee. And I thought she was going to be a goner earlier out on the dock, but he waited, and the virus really kicked in, and he knew for sure that he was never going to have her full heart, and that wasn't enough for his jealous mind pumped up with the virus. And so he's like, okay, I'll finish her. That way she'll be wholly mine.
Yeah. what a tragic and just pointless, end to him. It's like he finally got her. She told him that, that's it. There will be a piece of her that always cares for Jim, mm-hmm. as would be normal. You can't spend that kind of time with somebody and not just right. totally erase them unless they're just, and he just ends up just this literally a monster. And just what a horrible way to finish off his yes. character.
I agree. I think, once again, we're talking about contrasting he and Barnes. You get to the point where Barnes was not satisfied with the way that justice was being done and was going to have to right. do something about it himself. Mario had his answer that would, like you said, satisfy most people, but because of the virus, it's not going to stand. And we just have to wonder who else has that or toast. But yeah, interesting storyline. I'm anxious to see where they go, but I believe they're going to address a little, but change up for the second half of the season. But we'll see if that happens in January or if it happens later on. They might use January to close up here and start the new, but we'll see. But if there's not anything else in that section, we can skip to the next section if you like. Yeah.
Go ahead, Yoda. Take it.
So we have Babs coming in to talk to Ed, and we both have talked about how much she is just rocking it this season. Erin Richards is just doing an awesome job with the writer's work, and she comes in and lays things out for Ed, but also gives him the time to really think about things and think things for himself. She gives him a riddle to play with. I love that she recognizes that he's got to work things out for himself mentally, that she can tell him things, but he really has to work it out mentally for it to really take effect. And that just seems that crazy smartness that she's got going on right now.
When she started talking to Ed about how, oh no, help me. It's like, that is so wrong on mm-hmm. so many levels. I just can't even. And then, head off to the side, laughing. I embarrassed myself. It was that funny.
But so Ed kind of listens to her and says, okay, I don't really believe you, but I know how to test things out. And so it's so smart. He goes to Oswald and he words things the way he says, I want to be more than friends. And Oswald immediately jumps on and talks about love. And you love that fake reaction there of surprise by Ed. And he's like, no, I meant partners, business partners. And it's like,
yeah, sorry, there was miscommunication here. Yeah. And Robin Lord Taylor, I have to give this up because I'm going back to the discussion that you and Karen had a couple of weeks ago about how this is not about a relationship as such. This is Penguin really, coming out in the only way that he knows how to say, I really need you. And I need to know that there's loyalty here and I can count on you. And, I have to have this. And he communicated that brilliantly in just mm-hmm. those few lines. I don't know. I felt really bad for him.
I did in that way too. And it was very interesting because even we're starting to see Ed come back to who he really is, and that Riddler mode where he's at that dedication for the guy that wrote the book about the sewers.
You know, that was such a Gotham moment. It's like only in Gotham could there be a celebrated author about
and
the
so
sewers.
He's sitting there listening to that, and he's just having this fantasy about, he's got the knife out and he's fantasizing about killing Penguin. But that's not him. That's not who he really is as the Riddler. That wouldn't be justification enough. And so he realizes he's got to do more, and he really can't do that on his own. So let's go make a truce and get the help I need.
Butch is like, what the?
Oh, man. The Sirens Club, you know, it's good to see Tabitha's got her hand back. She, granted, doesn't have full strength. She can't even hold the knife. She's like all angry about that. And Butch is like, we'll kill him together. We'll kill him. We'll get him. And in he walks. And Barbara's like, hang on. Let him talk. And, oh, man. I just really like it because she lays it out. You need our help. We need your help. You scratch our back, we'll scratch yours, and we'll make this work. And, oh, it's so good, but so bad for Gotham.
Well, you know, I mean, I think Ed has a great point in that he's saying to Barbara, you know darn well that the five families are not going to fall up under you. And I think that's going to be an interesting power struggle. You know, I don't know if they're going to go down this road where they really do move Penguin out of the way for a while. But I think that'd be an interesting type of scenario to see. Would these folks actually start to go lock, stock, and barrel with her? And I don't see it either.
I think she makes a good point that Ed knows them well enough that maybe that can be leverage. It's like either you accept her and fall under her rule, or these things get leaked, because he has been doing all of Oswald's bookkeeping, both mayoral and Lord of the Underworld there. So
here's your schedule for the underworld. Here's your schedule as mayor.
But yeah, I think it was really smart of her of realizing her strengths and weaknesses and going that route. And yeah, I don't know how long they'll hold under her sway, but it's going to be interesting to see. And yeah, her trying to rein in Tabitha and Butch, that apology, yeah, she said it's going to need work, but still.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry
but,
about your
I mean, both of them have lost their hands, and they're not happy. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. And once again, it wasn't a huge part of the storyline, but it was just enough to bring in a little bit of levity and a little bit of fun. And I love the writing where Ed says, I don't want to kill him. I want to destroy him. I love that villain speech there. You know, it's like, it's not good enough just to kill him. I want him to suffer.
Yeah, wanted to know, yeah, where it came from and how it is. Yep.
So, yeah, so that was fun. Any other points for that storyline?
No, yeah. More to come there. That should be a whole circus to watch. That'll be interesting.
Definitely. But yeah, good stuff. So the last section. So we have the Hal's repository for their safe being scouted out. We find out we're down some whisper game, thanks to the Talon, and but they're still willing to go through with it. They're still willing to go through with a job to kind of get the owls off and out of Gotham. And so they scout out the location. And so they're talking about, all I'm thinking about is the heist from Ocean's 12 with all the elaborate maneuvers that they're going to have to go through to get, to get that into that safe. And so we still have this dialogue between Bruce and Selina. He really wants to know where she's at and wants their relationship to be clear. And she's just not having it.
Yeah, poor guy. He needs some definition. And you're right. She's just like, shut up.
But they head back to the manor, and Bruce is practicing his tightroping skills. And you just see Selina look at disgust. She's like, oh, I can do that better. He's going to fail. He's going to fail. But I really appreciate the conversation that Alfred had with her, how he brings up the fact that, it may not be the best time, but Bruce understands the risk, and he made that deal to protect you. And to see that really process in her brain, and she's walks off and she leaves, but she's processing that. But I like the fact that Alfred's in that point in the relationship with Selina that he's willing to lay that out there, because he makes the point, I'm not here to protect Bruce. I'm here to see him grow up to the man he needs to be. And I love that switch.
That's
a big switch in his head compared to last season, of one, realizing that I can't protect him. I can only help him be the man he should be. And I know how important she is, because he's still done with all of the juvenile stuff. He lays it out and says, let's concentrate on the mission here to Bruce. Let's concentrate on this at hand. Let's worry about the other stuff with her later, how she feels.
Yeah, please. Yeah, it took me back to the first season. Bruce went out looking for something or exploring or whatever, and got himself down in that wooden, back out in the woods in that pit. And Alfred knew it. Let him stay there. Let him figure it out. And you're right. To think about their role and how much it has changed, even from season one, it's such a good progression. And I just thought that was a brilliant statement of, to help guide him to the man he needs to be. And that's exactly the role he will play, for the rest of his life. And it was beautiful. It was well written. So
the Talon has taken out the rest of the Whisper Gang, and Alfred realizes, okay, we need to move forward. So they head over there, but he's really realizing, okay, you're not going to be able to walk that tightrope. And, okay, we're going to have to rethink this. And in comes Selina. And I can do it. And Alfred's like, okay, stay on comms.
Right. That's what it's going to be. Yes, you will stay on comms, and you will do as I say. And, we will get this done. Yeah, it was good. And you could tell it had taken an effect on her. The part where he said, you know, yeah, okay, this may not have been the best deal, you know, mm-hmm. but he did it for you. And you could tell that really, you know, did come back yeah. to her. So
they get in, and the plan worked really well to get in. I thought the way that they mm-hmm. they timed everything. I loved seeing Alfred just knock out those guards and be on top of things. I love stealthy Bruce getting in with Selena and then making it in, and their kind of clockwork working there, of Alfred checking things and making sure everything was clear. Of course, the Talon's on top of everything, and he comes in and ruins it. But it's interesting, the contents of the safe was a crystal owl.
Yeah. Now here's mm-hmm. here's my first question. Who's pulling whose leg?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because so the Whispering Gang says we know what's in this safe. There's only two keys. Quarterbouse has one. We have the other. Okay. So do they not know? Do they not know what's in the safe? But the owls have trick them into believing that there's some powerful power stone or something that's in this safe, and only to come to the point where, you know, there's nothing in it. Or on the other side, were the Whispering folks just pulling Bruce's leg to see if he would go through this and maybe get caught by the owls? Or, I mean, there's so much backhandedness that could be going on here. But when she opened that safe and it was a crystal owl, I was like, oh, come on.
Yeah. My thought on it is this. Once the owls knew at the end of the last episode that the key was found, they moved what was in the safe. Now, nobody, because the Talon killed both of those folks, there was no way for the Whisper Gang to know that the owls knew about the key and that kind of stuff, but they did. So my thought is the owls went in and moved whatever was in that safe out and put that in there. So that's my thinking. I honestly don't think the Whisper Gang was just doing this as a test for Bruce, because there's just too much at stake. There would be no need for them to really need him other than that key and that agreement. So I really don't see it as a test that way. So I think that the owls knew and moved what was ever in the safe and had the Talon ready. So that's my thought.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. So sense. We have the Talon is being fought off by Alfred round two, and he tells Bruce and Selena to leave, but they're not going to. They've got to help Alfred out. So they're all three of them fighting the Talon to not much good, and it all looks lost when our shadowy watcher comes in and hits the Talon over the head and gives Alfred the upper hand to kill the Talon. And it was very interesting. We see this shadowy watcher earlier and come in, and she takes off her hat and scarf, and it's Selena's mom.
Now, I have no comic background. Is this someone like within the canon of the Batman story, or is this something made up?
I don't, and I didn't get a chance to look it up online beforehand, but it raises so many questions. And here Selena is trying to figure out love and affection from Bruce, and the woman that who is her mom, who she looked for so long and so desired her love and affection, has come back into her life. She has got to be just blown away emotionally. Okay, is this woman going to try to come in and be my mom? How should I feel about her? I waited for so long. I looked for her. Do I really let her in? Do I trust her? Oh, man. So many emotions there to explore.
Yeah, this would be an interesting rabbit hole to go down again as we come back on the back.
Yeah, we know she's going to be there. Where mom has been, if mom has been back and watching Selena for long or just now coming back, we really don't know. What will she think of Bruce? Oh, just all these questions about that. And it's really, I think it may put the romance, the Bruce Selena romance on the back burner a little bit, which is good to put pause there, but we'll see. It's very interesting. And like I said, I enjoy the Al storyline, and this just adds another aspect to another plot that they can bring along. I have not heard if the second half of the season is still going to have the subtitle Mad City, but I probably believe it will. But it's going to be interesting. Going to be interesting there.
Absolutely.
Any
Absolutely.
Other points that we may have missed?
Not that I can think of. This was just a chock full episode. I really feel like it gave everybody, all the main cast, a really great exposure this week. We really let them shine, even if it was a little bit of time or a lot of time. Just well executed, well put together. So
I did too, and I'm glad they did it this way. I'm glad that they were conscious about things and laying things out. I've got to, like I talked about last week, I've got folks that kind of lost interest, but I told them, you know, some of what went on in this episode. And I really think you've got to think about, if you're not from a comic standpoint, it's going to be a little more challenging, because what they're really doing is arc storylines. And if you're not used to that from the comics, where these arcs are going to be different, you're going to have, you know, some of the same characters, and they're going to have similar motivations, but they're going to be a different arc. It's going to be a different story to tell. And so you can't always go back to the same well. It gets disappointing. So I'm hopeful that folks will hear about what's going on and come back and see how it is. And we've got, you know, a little while to do that. We've got a little break, but let's go ahead and move into feedback. So we have two pieces of feedback this evening. We have feedback from Phoenix, and we have feedback from Green Butterfly. And I think you're in for a treat from Phoenix, so take a listen.
Greetings, Gotham fans. This episode featured such riddles and rhymes that I chose to recap in lyric this time. Beware the green monster, the title it is, and 8-10 crushed skulls my rating tis. But enough of this banter, so dry and so dull, and on with the story we all oh so love. A blood doctor bloodied by a doctor with rage, from the black blood of Tetch, the younger of age. Miss Babs the baddie tempts the Riddler with rhymes, cluing in our good Nygma, who for Penguin pines. The Riddler is sickened by Cobblepot's deeds, and decides to exact the revenge that he needs. Loved the Mad Hatter in his paper hat, and how clever James was to think of all that. With a bit of some rhyme and a lot of wit, he could get the Hatter to give all of it. The hints that he needed between rhyming filler allowed him to find out the name of the killer. A bruised, guilty Mario can pass Gordon's test, but Gordon knows better and vows not to rest. Lee believes Jim to be under a spell. but Gordon professes his love with a swell of emotion too deep for Lee but to react with bitter wet tears of anger and slap. The marriage proceeds as they often do. No objection from Gordon, but a fist or two. Gordon goes down as Lee takes Mario's name, but something tells me there's more to this game. Dear Bruce and his manservant Alfred, I must say that this story did hurt my head. Looking to infiltrate the court's building high, our favorite cat takes a walk across the sky, avoiding the lasers like a river of crocs to get to the vault with a key to unlock. But what does the safe contain but inside? A curious owl of crystal it hides. Alfred again dances deadly with doom, but with help from the team does vanquish the goon. And the mysterious lady is none other than our cat of the show, of whom Bruce is a fan. The mother of that who Bruce does admire. I must say I wasn't gobsmacked by this turn, as it seems only logical, a fact to have learned. Gordon lies battered and beaten and bruised, but finally gets some good news he can use. The Fox and the Gotham PD solve the case, and Carmine agrees to give Gordon the place. But will Carmine and Lee believe what Jim says, that a bullet to the heart could have really saved the day? There are several till we will find out what visions of still living Jerome are about. My time for a rhyme has ended now, so with a heartfelt aloha, I thusly must go.
Wow. to be able to do that in rhyming scheme that long, way to go, Phoenix. Wow. You know, that's pretty good. I don't think I could have pulled that off.
That feedback was great for Phoenix to come next episode. I can't wait.
Oh, man. Yeah, he said, I sent this to you. One of you might want to listen to it. The other one might not want to until you do it live. And so, yeah, but it was great. Thanks, Phoenix, for sharing your thoughts and laying out your summary in rhyme form. Yeah.
That took a lot of work. I gotta give it to you there, Phoenix. I loved his pickup on the newspaper hat that Tetch was wearing. That was a really nice touch. So
it wouldn't be a good episode of Gotham Undercover if we didn't have word from our eye in the sky. So take a listen to the Green Butterfly's report.
Good evening, Gotham. This is your Eye in the Sky Green Butterfly. Well, that was the wedding of the decade. Were you guys invited? Me neither. I guess it was a very exclusive list. So the green-eyed monster caused Penguin to take out Isabella. But now that Ed is catching on, it is pure rage causing him to want to take out Penguin. Stabby Babs in charge? Oh no! She has the nickname of Stabby Babs! I don't want her in charge of anything! Mario outsmarted the test. Oh no! Did somebody tell Jim? I bet he's already on the case, and he's going to do something foolish. Selina's further developing her Catwoman skills, carefully crossing that wire to snatch the owl. Oh no, Mario really is crazy. When he gets Lee alone, he's gonna... Oh, thank goodness, Jim to the rescue! Oh no, this is bad. This is really, really bad. This episode gets 9 out of 10 key pieces of evidence washed out with the tide. Have a super week. Green Butterfly out.
Thank you so much, Green Butterfly. Yeah, Stabby Babs in charge. Oh, no!
We totally agree.
Definitely, definitely. Good stuff. We love hearing from Green Butterfly. I love, how she brings those points up and... bringing up those points about will everybody understand? Will Carmine really understand? We'll see. I don't know. I don't know if he's going to be too happy with Jim one way or the other, but
that'll be interesting. I think they'll be bringing back Carmine back into his old role. I think he'll be back out of retirement here after as things progress.
He may in order to stab, get rid of stabbing bad. Yeah. Oh man. But anyway.
All right. So if you would like to be like Phoenix or like our green butterfly, who we love so dearly, you can bring your feedback to Gotham Undercover each and every Thursday by 6 p.m. Eastern. You can call us at 304-837-2278. You can also go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can text out your feedback. You can attach an audio file. You can use the provided SpeakPipe widget, or you can just type out an email and send it that way. At Twitter, we are at GothamGSM. And to subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or any of the awesome Golden Spiral Media podcasts, simply go to goldenspiralmedia.com/iTunes.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And so this is interesting. We had a fall finale, the F word.
Yeah, sorry, Karen. Yeah.
But we're also going to have a winter one. Because here's how it's going to work. We're going to take a break until January 16th. So no new Gotham until January 16th. We will have three episodes in January, the 16th, the 23rd, and the 30th. And this was confirmed to us by at Gotham TV Writers on Twitter Monday night. And so then after the 30th, we will take a long break because Gotham's time slot will be occupied by 24 Legacy. They will premiere after the Super Bowl, and then they will have an episode the next night, and they will air for 11 weeks, and then we will come back on April 24th. And with the three episodes in January, that leads us to going to about June 12th. If they don't take any other breaks between April 24th and June 12th, it's going to be that long. Now, if they do have a break for Major League Baseball or something else, it will be an extra week. So we're going into June, and we've been wanting to know all season how we're going to do this because of 24 Legacy. So we've got a break. So you've got a break until January to watch. And then we've got a break then to go forward. And so we've got Gotham during sweeps. That's the good thing. They'll be playing during May sweeps. So that's a good thing. So
that's a good indication of where Fox stands with the show and how they believe in it. So looking forward to projecting that there will be a season four. So, all right. In other news, we have Jerome also as the proto Joker. Cameron Monaghan will be back in Gotham in 2017. So is he another Professor Strange experiment? Mm. Is he a Court of Owls experiment outside of Strange? We'll just have to wait and see. Gotham producer Ken Woodruff told TV Guide that Jerome wouldn't be back until season four. However, in the rest of season three, the themes and mythos of the Joker will be explored. Does this promo signal a change to that statement? Or does it just help reinforce the cult of Joker in Gotham? We'll have to figure that out in 2017. Until then, join us in the Facebook group, and we will keep each other up to date.
That's right. As soon as they get new pictures for the episodes in January, we'll have them up, and we'll keep you up to date with any news that we get, casting news and other things like that. And, yeah, we look forward to it. And once again, I would encourage folks to encourage others to, you know, if they dropped it this season, say, hey, take a look at things, how it went this first half, and know that Jerome is coming back eventually, so you need to be caught up. So,
That's right. The first two seasons, if folks don't know, which I'm sure if you're listening, you do, but you can let folks know the first two seasons of Gotham are streaming right now on Netflix, and it is a trending show, which is a good sign as well. But you can certainly let folks get caught up, and then I'm sure there's ways to go back through Hulu or some other service and work your way back up to season three. But this is, we need to, those of us who are loyal and really love the show, need to start getting the word
definitely. Well, John, I thank you so much for filling in for us this week. Where can we find you?
We can find me on Twitter at John P. McGrail. It's McGrail. I am also on Facebook as John McGrail from Salisbury, North Carolina. You can find me for the next 5 weeks or so on Stuff I Learned Yesterday here on Golden Spiral Media. And when that comes to a close, which I'm really sad about, but all good things must come to an end, I guess. After that, I have a new role here on Golden Spiral Media, and I will be a regular co-host, a permanent co-host with Corey Metcalf over on Triplecast. And we will continue looking at three films that have some sort of common element to them, and reviewing those, and still bringing in guest hosts to join us. And I am looking forward to switching that channel, if you will, over to Triplecast. It's going
to
be fun.
Yeah, it will be. I'm so happy for you to be able to fill in that role and help Corey out. And it seems like y'all had a lot of fun on the Pixar trilogy, so it'll be fun to hear how y'all do going forward.
Yeah, appreciate it, Jeff. So, and you take care of the blog post for us over there, and certainly appreciate that.
Fun stuff.
Thanks so much for having me on, Jeff. It's been a real
fun. Yeah. So we will talk to you in podcast form in January, and then we will get back at it. But join us on the Facebook group. But until then, we leave you with our music.